Imagine losing $250,000 in a single afternoon.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a nightmare scenario for any facility.
Right, and not because a massive earthquake hit your Orange County facility or, you know, some catastrophic cyber attack. You lose that money because a $50 sensor on a high-speed cooling valve vibrated at the wrong frequency for 3 weeks.
And nobody noticed.
Exactly, nobody noticed. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are taking a really hard look at the actual mechanics of AI predictive maintenance, specifically for Orange County manufacturers and facilities in the year 2026.
It's such a crucial topic right now.
It really is. And the mission for you listening today is to figure out how to extract the real actionable intelligence from this tech. We're moving way past the generic, AI is the future buzzwords.
Right, because those buzzwords don't actually help you run a business.
Exactly. We want to understand exactly how businesses can detect maintenance risks earlier, harmonize their data, and plan services before a failure just completely disrupts operations.
Which is critical, honestly. Because when handled carefully, this technology supports immense operational trust and visibility. I mean, it fundamentally transforms how a business manages its physical footprint.
But if it's ignored...
A business just bleeds capital. They lose high-value leads, they compromise security, and the scary part is they often do it without ever immediately seeing the root cause.
It's basically like driving your car with a piece of black electrical tape stuck over the check engine light, crossing your fingers and hoping for the best until smoke starts pouring out of the hood.
That is a very accurate and very terrifying analogy.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the operational reality in most of these facilities isn't a lack of technology. I mean, we are in 2026. Most of these factory floors are absolutely covered in sensors.
Oh, they are everywhere. You can't walk 10 feet without passing a dozen of them.
Right. So the problem seems to be the invisible friction between all these systems. We're talking about highly complex environments where, like, a legacy milling machine from 1998 might be operating 20 feet away from a state-of-the-art automated robotics line.
And that is the exact toxic combination.
Yeah.
Organizations are basically drowning in scattered telemetry.
Drowning in it.
Yeah. They have isolated sensors throwing off gigabytes of thermal, acoustic, and vibration data, but none of it is harmonized. You couple that scattered data with manual inspections and unclear asset histories, and you get a fundamentally reactive maintenance culture.
Basically playing whack-a-mole, but whack-a-mole while blindfolded.
Exactly. The leadership team is flying blind. They're reacting only when the smoke clears.
Which means the real danger isn't just the machine breaking, it's the data silos.
Yes, 100%.
But I want to push back on something I was reading in these implementation playbooks. We all know downtime is bad. Anyone running a facility knows that a downed conveyor belt destroys your overall equipment effectiveness, your OEE metrics.
Sure, that's day one stuff.
Right. But the playbooks claim this internal floor chaos directly weakens customer conversion.
And that it degrades the digital experience.
It does. It absolutely does.
But how? How does a jammed actuator on a physical factory floor actually ruin a digital customer interaction, like a customer looking at a screen?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it is all about data synchronization. Let's trace the actual mechanism. Let's say that actuator jams, production halts.
Okay.
Instantly, your enterprise resource planning system, your ERP, is out of sync with your physical reality. It still thinks you are producing 50 units an hour.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. That bad data pushes to your CRM, and suddenly your sales team is promising delivery dates that are physically impossible to meet.
Ah, so the customer portal is displaying inventory that doesn't actually exist. Or, you know, promising a lead time of 2 days when it's realistically going to be 6 weeks.
Precisely. And then the customer support team gets flooded with inquiries. And because the maintenance is reactive, the support team has no idea when the line will be back up.
So they just stall. They stall. They give vague answers. The back-end systems are struggling to reconcile the supply chain delay, which causes the customer's digital interface to reflect inconsistent proof of reliability.
Wow.
And in a hyper-competitive market like Orange County Aerospace or medical device manufacturing, those trust signals vanish instantly. Customers expect reliable systems, and weak execution on the facility floor quietly destroys conversion everywhere else.
So the broken actuator is basically the pebble in the pond, and the digital experience is the tsunami hitting the shore weeks later.
That is exactly what it is.
It makes complete sense why leaders have to connect this to real decisions. You have to protect the foundation, or the whole data architecture shakes. Which I guess brings us to the actual solution.
The fun part.
Yeah, the fun part. Though implementing AI predictive maintenance across a massive facility sounds like an overwhelming, chaotic IT disaster waiting to happen.
It definitely can be if you do it wrong.
But the playbooks we're looking at map out a highly controlled three-phase practical implementation roadmap.
Right, and it's entirely built around controlled progress. Phase one is strict. You have to keep it incredibly narrow.
So no wiring up the entire factory floor on day one.
Definitely not. You connect asset data and define failure signals for a single narrow use case.
And here's where we need to talk about how this actually works. Because predictive AI isn't just like a louder alarm bell attached to a machine.
No, not at all.
Reading this, it sounded more like giving your manufacturing equipment a high-resolution EKG.
That is a highly accurate way to look at it. The AI doesn't just read a simple temperature gauge. It ingests thousands of hours of historical multivariate telemetry.
Like what?
Acoustic signatures, thermal output, vibration frequencies. It uses all of that to establish a baseline heartbeat for that specific machine under normal operating load.
So it's learning what healthy sounds and feels like. It's not waiting for the heart attack. It's looking for the microscopic flutter in the heartbeat months in advance.
Exactly. It uses machine learning to detect an anomalous harmonic distortion. For example, a bearing might sound perfectly fine to the human ear. Right. But the AI detects a frequency shift of a few hertz that indicates microscopic wear. It flags that variance way before the physical snap.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, but where I also tripped up a bit while reading. Phase one explicitly mandates that you keep humans in approval loops.
Yes, that is a core rule.
I was looking at that thinking, wait, if the AI is smart enough to detect a microscopic frequency shift that a human can't even hear, why are we putting a human bottleneck back in the process?
It's a fair question.
Shouldn't the AI just automatically order the $50,000 replacement part or, I don't know, automatically shut down the line to prevent damage?
What's fascinating here is the cost of a false positive in an industrial setting.
Oh, interesting.
The AI's job right now is to process massive amounts of scattered data and detect risk earlier. It is the ultimate analyst. But an automated unilateral action by an AI based on a false thermal read, that could
No.
shut down an entire assembly line.
Which costs millions of dollars in stalled production.
Yeah.
So it's about context. Like, the AI might see a sudden temperature spike, but the human operator knows, oh, the bay doors were just opened on a 95-degree August day in Irvine?
Exactly. Keeping humans in the loop builds operational trust. The human experts validate the alerts before making incredibly costly workflow changes.
That makes total sense.
You pilot the narrow use case, the AI taps the human on the shoulder to say, look at this anomaly, and the human verifies it. That documented improvement is what lets you move to phase two.
Which is measurement.
Right, measurement.
And phase two is where we get into the metrics. But it's not just basic machine uptime. The playbooks really emphasize metrics that connect back to the business health we talked about earlier.
Because uptime alone doesn't tell the whole story.
Right. They want you tracking response time, risk reduction, fewer support tickets, and cleaner operational reporting.
Because if you are only measuring uptime, you are missing the financial impact of the technology. You need to define exactly what is being tracked and, crucially, who is going to respond when the AI flags an issue.
Which naturally leads into phase three standardizing ownership. Someone actually has to own the maintenance, the reporting, the vendor coordination, and the future software updates.
They do. Someone has to be the point person.
But let's be honest, standardizing ownership sounds great in a boardroom, but humans are notoriously bad at maintaining standardized habits over time. Is that the bottleneck? Like, where does the human element actually break the system down?
You hit the nail on the head. That transition from a pilot project to a daily discipline is exactly where most companies derail their own progress.
Really? That's the main trap.
Oh, absolutely.
Huh.
Treating AI predictive maintenance as a one-time IT installation rather than an ongoing operating discipline is the first massive mistake these companies make.
Oh, I see. They treat it like installing a new router. They plug it in, watch the green lights blink, high-five each other, and just walk away.
And the moment there is staff turnover, or a vendor changes, or a new piece of equipment is added to the floor, the baseline heartbeat of the facility changes.
Ah. So the AI is looking at the wrong baseline.
Right. If the AI model isn't continuously owned and calibrated, the data degrades. Within a year, you are right back to reactive maintenance.
Wow. So it's the classic trap of measuring activity instead of measuring outcomes.
Yes.
That dynamic reminds me exactly of buying a top-tier, wildly expensive gym membership.
Oh, I love this analogy.
Right. You download the customized workout app, you buy the moisture-wicking gear, you tell all your friends on social media you're on a fitness journey, you generate a massive amount of activity. But if you never actually lift a weight, your outcome, your physical health, hasn't changed one bit. Purchasing an AI tool is just buying the gym membership.
It is a brilliant analogy.
Yeah.
The real question is, are we busy or are we effective? And to force companies to actually lift the weights, these strategy guides heavily emphasize grounding your implementation in credible external standards.
Like a structured workout plan.
Exactly. Specifically, they point to the NIST AI Risk Management Framework.
Okay. The National Institute of Standards and Technology. I want to dig into that because NIST frameworks can easily sound like bureaucratic checklists to people.
They definitely can sound dry.
What does this framework actually do in the context of predictive maintenance? Why is it so crucial?
It forces calibration and prevents what data scientists call model drift.
Model drift. Okay, break that down for us.
Let's say you train your predictive AI on data collected entirely during the winter months. The machines are operating in an ambient temperature of, say, 60 degrees.
Okay, sounds normal.
The AI learns that baseline. But when August hits Orange County, ambient temperatures in the facility rise. Without the NIST framework's validation protocols, the AI might suddenly start throwing hundreds of false alerts, thinking every single machine is overheating.
Because its definition of normal drifted away from reality.
Yes. The NIST framework demands that you map, measure, and manage these risks. It requires security protocols against adversarial data inputs. Ensuring bad sensor data doesn't accidentally poison the AI's learning model. It forces you to constantly ask, did this implementation actually reduce operational risk? Or did it just introduce a new layer of chaotic software management?
Right. It demands proof of outcome. But, you know, knowing the roadmap and surviving the framework is really only half the battle here.
It is. The technical side is only part of it.
None of this matters if the leadership team refuses to approve the budget or if the third-party tech vendors you hire completely drop the ball. So what does this all mean for the person trying to pitch this?
The budget conversation is always the hardest part.
How do you justify the budget for an AI system when the return on investment is literally just nothing happens?
That is the ultimate paradox of maintenance. When you do your job perfectly, nothing breaks. And leadership wonders why they are even paying you.
Exactly. Everything's fine. Why do we need this massive budget?
Budgeting for this requires a strategic split. You have to separate your urgent fixes from your maturity improvements.
Okay, give me an example of how that split works in practice.
Well, urgent fixes are your immediate fires, the things directly affecting uptime, compliance, or immediate physical safety. You fund those out of risk mitigation budgets.
Okay. That makes sense. And the maturity improvements.
Maturity improvements are the things that make the system smarter over time.
Yeah.
Better automated reporting, deeper data harmonization across legacy PLCs, advanced team training.
But getting the budget approved for either of those requires leverage.
It does.
And the playbooks recommend a really fascinating approach. They say your first budget discussion shouldn't feature a price tag for the AI tool at all.
No price tag on day one.
Right. It should focus entirely on quantifying the cost of inaction. You sit the board down and ask, what happens if we leave our telemetry unresolved for another quarter? What is the bleeding cost of doing nothing?
It completely reframes the psychology of the purchase.
Yeah.
You are no longer asking for money to buy shiny new software. You are asking how much capital the business is comfortable burning by saying blindfolded.
Which is a brilliant strategy, except for one massive problem I see here. How do you quantify the cost of inaction when the entire premise of our problem is that the facility's current data is scattered, siloed, and messy? Like, you can't prove how much money you're losing if you don't have the data to measure the loss.
That's a great point. The answer is you establish a baseline with whatever messy data you actually have.
Really? Just use the mess.
Yeah. You don't need perfect, harmonized cloud analytics to start. You simply document the current physical reality.
So what does that actually look like on the ground for a facility manager?
A facility manager might just pull the raw number of reactive maintenance tickets from the last 90 days. That's it.
Just the paper trail.
Exactly. They document who currently owns the manual inspection process, how many hours it takes, and the estimated cost of expedited shipping for replacement parts they had to buy at the last minute.
Those overnight shipping fees really add up.
They do. It is not perfect data, but it is a line in the sand.
You are building a paper trail of the friction.
Exactly. Because the strongest signal of success for this pilot phase isn't achieving a flawless automated utopia.
Right.
It is achieving controlled progress. If you can show leadership that deploying predictive AI on one specific conveyor line reduced emergency part orders by 40% compared to your messy baseline, you have won the argument for the maturity budget.
And to make sure that argument doesn't just evaporate, when the facility manager takes a two-week vacation, the documentation has to be bulletproof.
Absolutely.
But not massive 100-page manuals that nobody reads. The sources talk about a short living record. What is the current state? What decisions were made? Who is responsible for the validation loop? When is the next review date?
It's essentially a simple verification log. It protects the institutional memory. Future teams shouldn't have to restart the discovery process from scratch every time someone leaves.
Which brings us to the vendors. Mm. You are bringing in outside partners. The playbooks mention companies like Technigion, which specialize in AI consulting and custom software development.
Right, because integrating those systems is complex.
Yeah, integrating 1998 legacy machines with 2026 AI cloud analytics requires heavy custom API development. How do you keep a highly technical vendor accountable when the leadership team might not even understand the code?
You demand plain language reporting. No black box AI allowed.
So they can't hide behind the jargon.
Never. A vendor's job isn't just to write API integrations. It is to translate complex telemetry into business intelligence.
Make it make sense for the business.
Exactly. Leadership should not need an advanced degree in data science to know if the business improved. If the vendor cannot explain in plain English how their technical deployment reduced mechanical risk or improved the CRM lead times, they are failing.
Wow.
Plain language reporting forces the vendor to align with your business outcomes, not just their technical activity.
They have to prove they took the blindfold off.
Exactly.
Well, this has been an incredibly revealing journey through the mechanics of industrial AI. We started by looking at the silent killer of scattered data and reactive maintenance. The fact that a vibrating sensor causes a supply chain delay that ultimately destroys a customer's digital trust.
We then mapped out the necessity of the EKG approach. Mm. You know, start narrow, train the AI on the baseline heartbeat of a single system, and mandate human validation loops to prevent catastrophic false positives.
We tackled the landmines, too. The danger of treating an ongoing operational discipline as a one-time software installation, and the trap of buying the gym membership without ever lifting the weights.
You know, we saw how frameworks like NIST prevent model drift. It ensures the AI's version of reality stays calibrated to the actual factory floor, even in August.
And finally, we looked at how to secure the budget by forcing a conversation about the cost of inaction, using a messy baseline to prove controlled progress, and holding vendors accountable through strict plain language reporting.
It's a very practical roadmap.
It really is. So for you listening, your immediate 30-day action items are crystal clear. First, confirm your current messy baseline. Pull those expedited shipping costs and the reactive maintenance tickets.
Second, assign one single owner for the first narrow improvement phase.
And third, review your main risks. Look at where unexpected failures are currently bleeding into your customer experience.
Those three steps alone will put you miles ahead of the competition who are still waiting for the machines to break before they act.
Absolutely. But before we sign off, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
I love these. Let's hear it.
We've spent this entire time dissecting how AI can analyze scattered, multivariate telemetry to predict exactly when a massive factory machine is going to break down, right? Allowing us to intervene before the failure.
Right.
But as this machine learning gets more sophisticated at monitoring complex workflows, you have to wonder how long until this exact same architecture is pointed at human capital.
Right.
How long until AI starts analyzing our emails, our meeting schedules, and our scattered digital habits to establish a baseline heartbeat of human employee burnout?
That is a wild thought.
Will we soon be scheduling mandatory predictive maintenance days for ourselves? Just because an algorithm detected a microscopic shift in our typing speed or communication frequency?
I mean, we might need it.
We just might. It's just something to think about. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning, keep learning, and we will catch you next time.